Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey everyone, Nick Rigoretti's back with another episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show, and for the second time, we have a returning guest. It's my friend Liam Reznikov, who runs VT1 Academy in Sydney. You know, last time I was speaking to you, I remember it very clearly, Liam. I was sitting in a multi-million dollar mansion in the middle of London. It was late at night and it was raining. I remember it clearly. And now I'm sitting in a multi-million rand apartment, which is not saying much. But it's still a really nice apartment overlooking the sea. You know, I just want to put out there to these people, won't even be listening to the show, but to both these people who've let me stay with them in these respective places while I'm waiting for this US visa and waiting to go move to the States. Just it's a sign for me of the universe's blessing and benevolence, because it really just has been fantastic the way it's worked out. So just putting that out there before we even start chatting. Liam.
I'm starting to wonder what I've done wrong. The universe isn't looking out for me, sir.
are you saying thank you every day? Are you doing your gratitude journal?
Oh, I mean, you know, I always say thank you, man. I'm not a particularly I'm a thankful person, but I sometimes forget how lucky I am. So I remind myself in the morning. I do the anti-Jocko. Do you ever listen to Jocko Willink?
Yeah, we actually spoke about this last time on the show, and you said you said he was quite a dangerous person. I think was your expression.
No. Yeah, I actually really like him. He's really enthusiastic, and I think he's done a lot of good. But you know, like he's one of the things he shouts out is, you know, get out of bed in the morning and attack the day. I actually have to force myself to stay in bed. Yeah. So I get up in the morning, I jump out of bed, and then I jump back in. I'm like, no, sit down, relax. Yeah. Things are going pretty well. We're good. You don't have to achieve that much today. Yeah. You did pretty good yesterday. You've done pretty good. You don't have to get out of bed for all the wrong reasons. So I actually now I do like the anti-Jocko. Nice. I sort of open my eyes. I hold the sheets and I stop myself getting out of bed. And I force myself to go, I'm okay. I don't need to get out of bed and attack the day. Just as, yeah, let's just relax. Things are going all right.
Mm-hmm. And when did you realize that you were lazy?
Lazy. I'm the opposite of lazy, and this is the problem, dude.
I'm messing with you.
No, but you know, so Nick, you're South African, right? Uh-huh. So you know, I'm South African as well. I was born in South Africa, and the South African parent thing is I need to scare the shit out of my children so that they will never be lazy. And there's a point in your life you get to where you realize you're actually inefficient because you're trying to get too much done because mm-hmm. you're terrified of being lazy. So I'm actually forcing myself to be lazy a little bit, it's okay to take a day off. Mm-hmm. It's all right to do nothing for the first hour of the morning, you know, so 100%. I actually force myself to like watch some TV in the morning now sometimes.
That's cool. I mean, just when you spoke about that dude's language, like you wake up and attack the day, it's been my experience that the things you attack back. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't need to get into a fight with anything else, dude. I've had enough fighting in my life. So I want to wake up and be friends with the day, bro.
Well, you know, it's funny, man. As a coach, you get to see, and as you know, you get to see quite a nice slice of society and where things are sort of heading. Obviously a limited one because, you know, my area is kind of an IT sort of area, you know, kind of like a middle class sort of area. But, you know, I see a lot of guys suffering with this concept that they need to work harder to not be a lazy middle class. What's it called? They call it whites. What's it called when someone has white something where it's like
white guilt,
their life's been too
privilege.
Lucky? White privilege. Yeah. I see a lot of people suffering from what I guess you'd call like Asian or white privilege, you know, and I'm like, dude, you work from 6 a.m. till midnight every single night, 6 days a week. You are not a lazy person. And they're like, yeah, but I don't want to be one of those lazy white / Chinese kids. And I'm like, dude, you need to calm down. You're so far from lazy that you're actually going around in a full circle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know. So anyway, that seems to be something that a lot of podcasts are pushing nowadays, is that, you know, that need to be doing and some sort of filling a gap in something. I don't know what it is, but you know what? Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I totally understand what you're talking
what
about.
What I'm talking about.
For me, the thing I'm working with now is the energy that I bring to my work. And I know if it comes from that place, which is, if it comes from a place of guilt and this expectation that I'm not doing enough or that I have to be working harder, my output is just garbage, bro. It's just crap. It's like...
Well, the expectation is that I'm not good enough unless I do something.
And like, what I'm trying to say is if you think about it, the way I look at it is everything's energy, bro. Everything is energy. I've had this in my mind for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've seen it proven true in my life over and over again. And if you consider the analogy of a droplet hitting the surface of a pond and that droplet ripples out, right? Your energy, the energy that you use, if you keep tracing things back, because we want to peel back the layers and see what's motivating us. Why am I doing my actions? And a lot of it's subconscious. You know, they say most of it is subconscious. And if I am doing something, and the little droplet that is causing that ripple is, I don't want to be lazy, I must work hard. That's an energy of fear or guilt. 100%. And what that means is that the ripples will all be tainted with that fear and guilt on some level, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And so I don't want to do that. I'll only start working when I feel grateful and refreshed and energized and excited to put something out. And then it's not work, dude. Then it's just fun.
So it's funny. I think when I say I don't wake up and attack the day, I force myself to stay in bed. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that I'm only going to get up and do work that isn't work, to make myself feel like I'm worth something.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, but it's exactly what I'm talking about. You want your work to come from a good place. You don't want it to come from a place of guilt or...
That's inherited, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's like dozens of generations old. It's not just you got it from your dad or your mom. It's something that I think's been perpetuated for generations, because they didn't have the access to insights that we get nowadays to actually understand where this stuff comes from. They just work until they basically die at 50.
Yeah, exactly.
Like have a heart attack at 30.
But to be fair, like, I mean, we have to, as reasonably intelligent guys, we have to look at the other side of the argument, which is that, you know, everything in the world that we enjoy and appreciate and that makes our life comfortable and easy and allows us to stay in bed until 9 a.m. or whatever it is, was created by people generally that hustled and worked like crazy. And I never forget that. But I also, again, swinging back, the correlation between hard work and output and success is not one-to-one. There's many people who work incredibly hard and have nothing to show for it. No one works harder than these black dudes I see here in South Africa, working at the side of the road. And man, that's not doing them any favors. It's not helping them at all.
It's a funny thing to correlate it to jiu-jitsu. It's most of the guys, you know, everybody knows a guy that people talk about being talented.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a talented guy. And you look at the guy and you're like, well, he only trains 3-4 times a week. I'm training 12 to 16 times a week.
Yeah.
And he's whooping my ass. This is weird. Why is he getting good so fast?
Yeah.
And I have a very intelligent boxing coach who's now actually, he's one of my black belts now. He's 56 years old, just got his black belt. But I'm not talking about black belt, honorary black belt. This is a like guy on the mat every day black belt.
Legit.
Like in phenomenal shape. You've met him
I've
before.
Met him,
his
yeah,
name's Eddie
cool,
Calabotti.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, taking care of himself his whole life. And he what was he saying to me? He said, I said, you know, Mr. K, there's something I really respect about you is you don't say yes to every opportunity that pops up. You know, and he said, you know, with age, you get a little bit of wisdom and you learn where your seat is at the table, and you don't get up every time there's a new seat that opens.
Yeah. That's
and I was
so
like,
true.
Dude, I need to learn that.
I love it. Yeah. So there's a book I read a while back. Man, I'm sorry, but the title escapes me. But the whole premise of the book was that learning to say no is one of the most, it is a hallmark of wisdom and maturity. On multiple levels, and you can only say no it's difficult to say no from a place where you have no where you have fear. Because if you're worried about something, like if you see an opportunity, you have like FOMO, right? You're like, oh God, I got to do it. I'm going to miss out. Whereas if you're secure and safe in yourself, yeah, it is. You can be like, no, this opportunity is not right for me. And I know something else will come along and you have patience and I agree with you, dude. And I guess I wouldn't want people to listen to this show and think that I'm afraid of hard work or I'm someone who doesn't believe in the value of hard work, because man, hard work can fucking change your life, dude. But it's about 100%. Applying it in intelligent bursts and at the right leverage points, just like jiu-jitsu. If you go into a jiu-jitsu match and you like you have that wrestler's mentality, which is, I'm going to go flat out forwards 100%, man, you better be the most conditioned athlete on the planet. Because after 90 seconds or 2 minutes against the good jiu-jitsu guy, you're going to be gassing, dude, because you haven't applied your power and efforts intelligently. Anyway, rant over.
No, you're right. I mean, people look at George St. Pierre. I remember one of his quotes. He was saying, everybody's the same fitness. We all have the same conditioning coaches. We all have the – of course, you've got, people with, better genetic gifts. But he said it's the guy who controls the fight is the guy who looks fitter than the other guy. Mm-hmm. So it's not – people say, what's the secret to your cardio? Is it you drink green shakes? And he says, no, I'm the guy who controls the pace.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think – as someone who's burnt out plenty in my life, I'm sure you have too, it's often when I'm not controlling my pace.
Yeah.
In training, in business, in everything. I mean, it's relationships. But yeah, back to those guys, those talented guys, they don't like hearing that they're talented, I noticed. They get pissed off at it because they still actually work hard in their mm-hmm. own way.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever spoken to one of those talented guys and said, yeah, man, you're super talented? He's like, fuck, I hate when people say that. And what I find is that those talented guys are often very talented at staying focused and not worrying about what's the most popular game in jiu-jitsu or what's the most popular. And I see those guys do business, and they're good at business too, because they don't read every book. They just pick one book and go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
They learn how to blinker slightly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a talent you can learn, but some people seem to be born with it. I don't know, or develop it as a child. I don't know where it comes from. Well, I just noticed it's common.
This can be tied into something I read recently, which I find very interesting. A study which showed that, I can't remember the exact specifics of it, but the takeaway point was that you should never encourage a child by saying, wow, you're really good or you're really talented. You should encourage them by saying, oh, you must have worked really hard at that,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was quite interesting.
I've seen that quote. You, I think you know that makes sense. About,
yeah. Another
well, I've noticed with fighters. Oh, sorry. No, continue. I've noticed that with fighters. If you call them talented, their training rate drops out pretty quickly.
That's interesting. Mm. And you've trained a lot. Yeah, you would
know. Yeah, 100%, man.
I noticed that one of the stories, if coming back to the hard work versus efficiency paradox, I guess it is a paradox because they're both required and they're 100%. Both true, I remember when I was a brown belt, I was training at Roger's place in London, and this other, I think I was teaching at the time at his academy, and I was like one of the toughest guys in the gym, definitely. And this other Brazilian dude came, and he was kind of like, he was out of shape. He's a few years older. I don't know how long he'd been a brown belt. Maybe he was a brown belt 2-3 stripes. And I rolled with him, and I remember like he just put me inside mount or mount, and don't get me wrong, he was a chunky dude, definitely outweighed me. But I was getting frustrated because he wasn't really doing anything, right? And I was like, I was trying all these cool things, and I want to try to cartwheel over the guy, I want to try this new sweep I learned, and like at the end of the match, I was like, bro, you're not really doing anything. And what I said to him was, bro, I'm doing all the work. And he just looked at me and went, I thought that was the point. And I was like, God damn. Okay, cool. This dude switched on.
That's kind of like an example of like knowledge versus wisdom. You know, like we're in the age of knowledge where everyone has knowledge, but very few people have actual wisdom.
Very true.
Yes.
Very true. So dude, you said to me, one of the reasons I'm going to call you out on it. Wanted to chat with me. I usually have to chase guests, but you're the guy who called me out and said, let's talk again. And I'm very happy you did that because I always enjoy talking to you. But You've got a lot on your mind. You said there's a lot to talk about, and I want to hear about these things.
Well, it's not necessarily my stuff, and I'm part of the jiu-jitsu industry, and I think there's a lot of stuff up in the air at the moment that's really interesting, and I think it's very hard to evolve thoughts without actually having someone throwing them back at you. So actually, I would have been happy just a phone conversation, but I thought, you know what? Like, the thing is, I have these conversations daily. I'm sick of repeating them. So I'm like, well, it's easier if we just talk about it on a radio show, get other people thinking and talking and, you know, move ideas forward. Because jiu-jitsu industry went through this strange, like, stagnation about a year or two ago. I noticed a huge sort of like cloud over jiu-jitsu. Do you notice that about 3 years ago? It was after that whole blue belt world champion sort of phase where everyone was trying to be a world champion, and then there was, you know, that whole drilling versus not drilling thing. You might have something to do with that. And then something just happened, man. People sort of just, it was around the worm guard time, just people just sort of lost interest in jiu-jitsu for a little bit. So now when I talk about it, and it's funny, my own experience is that the less I involve myself with the jiu-jitsu world scene, the more my love of jiu-jitsu, practice of jiu-jitsu flourishes. Mm-hmm. So I try not to get too involved, because it's actually, I'm sure you feel this way too, at stages, the more you're in the world, the less your own practice actually sort of grows. And it's hard. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Totally. I mean, when you make your living from something, you walk a very fine line. If you want to maintain your passion and enjoyment for it, you walk a very fine line. And that in itself is a job, navigating that edge. I do understand what you mean. My business partner gets very frustrated with me because he runs the social media. He does an amazing job of it. Like, it's a second to none job. We've got like 60,000 followers on our Facebook page, and it's,
yeah, you guys are doing amazing.
And it's largely because of him. And the thing is, like, he'll get upset with me because he'll be like, did you see that cool post I put up? And I'm like, man, I kind of almost, you know, I keep an eye on what we're putting out there, but I keep it at arm's length, because I know I'll get sucked into that world, and then eventually it's like
100%.
And I'm already so focused on jiu-jitsu. I mean, I'm writing my second book now about it. I'm on the mat all the time. Like, I can't go watch more jiu-jitsu videos, or I can't dive into that pool. Do you know what I mean? Or else I'm going to drown. If that makes sense.
Man, my enjoyment of jiu-jitsu and coaching is directly related, inversely related to my exposure to the jiu-jitsu world. And that sounds so weird, but it's exactly sort of what you're saying. I mean, I remember I was starting to put a bit of my Instagram stories on and, like, sort of focus on that sort of stuff and get some information out there. And I thought, no, this is totally wrong. I need to live a life where someone else wants to make Instagram stories about me. This is not the right way to do things. I'm focusing on creating content rather than creating content. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I didn't word that correctly. But
I
I'm looking for content rather than actually being someone worth making content about. And the thing is, I don't have a desire to have content made about me, but my enjoyment of jiu-jitsu, I want it to be like, I'm so engrossed and creative and involved and focused on it that someone else can do my damn social media.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
me,
it's so easy to get caught up in.
Well, an example from my life. Right?
I get excited.
Yeah, I get it. I'm working on our Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood membership site. You know, I've been working on this for 2 years and putting a lot of thought into it. And, you know, like, I'll find, when I'm trying my hardest to get content for the site and then think, okay, I need to work on sidemount techniques, or I need new concepts or whatever, and then I start like scouring the web and looking at other guys' stuff, and like, that's usually when I get overwhelmed, frustrated, and my output is low. But when I just go to the gym and do jiu-jitsu and like stuff comes to me, I'll be like, oh, cool, I'm learning. Like, it's not even people will show me stuff. I'll have my own insights while I'm training. I'll be like, this is cool. And I get all those benefits of like hanging out with people. And yeah, my passion for jiu-jitsu, just like yours, is kindled or exaggerated when I'm not involved in that world. And that world, dude, it's more the online world than anything. And it's, for me, it's more, you know, I don't want to paint everyone with the same brush, because it's not, I think stereotyping is, it's, you know, mentally lazy, but I find a lot of those online forums and stuff, the dudes are just fucking mean, dude. And they, it's like,
yeah.
I wonder how many of those guys are good at jiu-jitsu. I'd say like a fraction of the ones that are engaged all the time and like judging everything and commenting and saying, oh, this is bullshit, or this is the guy you have to listen to. I wonder how many of those guys are decent.
I've noticed that, funny enough, Reddit is actually a lot more positive than the forums. I actually started popping – because, you know, I met a lot of people originally through the forums when they weren't like a mainstream thing. I mean, you know, I used to travel around and, you know, I met Andre Anderson, who took me to Hey Diego and to this gym and that. And then I go to Brazil and people would be there from the forums. I go to America and then I met you. So I've met a lot of people through those sort of things. But, I mean, it has sort of seemed to change. But Reddit – I don't go on there, but my students go on there. Every time I see it there, people seem to be genuinely interested in actually sort of doing things that are useful to their own jiu-jitsu. But I found myself in a debate the other day about self-defense versus sport. And I don't know why I got sucked in, but I get really triggered when it comes to like the Valencia brothers. Like they trigger me like crazy.
Tell me everything. I don't know much about them except they all look pretty chunky from what I can remember of seeing them online. That's pretty much all I know about them. Is this the same group of guys?
Look, I'm trying to think if they're chunky. No, they're kind of skinny guys. But basically, they're kind of like portraying themselves a direct, you know, lineage to Elio. And I have no problem with that. I mean, I was part of Gracie Umaitar under Hoyla Gracie before, and I spent quite a bit of time. I actually visited their gym. It's nothing really against the guys themselves, but they're teaching jiu-jitsu that is going against every reason why I started. And I started jiu-jitsu because I was doing karate and judo. There was no pressure testing. Judo obviously did, but, you know, there were people who would just make up techniques and not test techniques. And deep down in my gut, I knew that this stuff would get you hurt in a real situation where you're defending yourself or your family or whatever. And they're teaching stuff which is like 1970s self-defense jiu-jitsu that has nothing to do with real self-defense, and it's not pressure tested. And I mean, I get that everyone has to make a living, and they're actually doing an amazing job preserving jiu-jitsu. But I can't help but feel it's misleading when, you know, we all started jiu-jitsu for Valetudo, for sport, for resistance, and they're going in the opposite direction. And I've actually noticed the entire self-defense world in jiu-jitsu going in that direction. And it's a very strange and slightly dangerous, kind of annoying. And I started arguing about it with some guys, like, look, guys, I'm not saying anything bad about the Valencia brothers. I'm just saying that the jiu-jitsu self-defense stuff, because I did the courses and I was part of Humaita for like 16 years. Some of the stuff, headlock escapes, great. But the other stuff, some of the stuff is going really, really like 1960s, 1970s stuff, which we got out of our other martial arts to get into jiu-jitsu to get away from. And I was arguing, I was trying to be very logical and trying to push this point about pressure testing, self-defense, sport, all that sort of stuff. And man, people started jumping on me, and I was like, you know what? I'm not here to save the world. I'm going back to my gym to work on better ways to stop sucker punches and headlocks. So
I'm going to go train jiu-jitsu.
Look, I believe jiu-jitsu is good for self-defense too, but it needs to be trained and evolved. And, you know, I don't see the point in teaching something that's archaic unless you've got a museum you're running. So I went back to my gym and we put on the gloves. We did a bit of self-defense stuff, changed some positions, did some rolling, had a laugh. I was like, what am I doing on the internet with these guys? This is nuts. Let the Valencia brothers, you know, run their thing and some other guy run his, and I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah, good.
That's my experience with the internet currently, but
yeah, dude,
what's your take on all this self-defense stuff?
Oh, dude, it's complex. It's complex. depends who's listening.
Yeah, man, look, I know, man.
I personally believe if you teach someone a self-defense technique against a knife attack, you're basically teaching them the quickest way to get killed.
Yes.
I think if you're trying to teach them stuff against multiple attackers, you're teaching them the quickest way to get the shit kicked out of them. If you're teaching someone how to hold themselves, how to analyze a situation, how to have a chance against a single unarmed attacker or a violent confrontation. Maybe some guy jumps out of his car and has road rage and comes up to your window. I mean, then to be honest, bro, like, fucking, if you're a purple belt, you're going to be able to handle yourself. No doubt.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you're in a bar somewhere with a bunch of Hell's Angels who getting up in your grill, jiu-jitsu might give you some kind of a presence, some kind of a, like a feeling of, or a way to like engage with these guys and like not show too much fear in your body posture and kind of just, you know, have that kind of like manly presence about you that might cause them to like respect you and back down a little bit. But is the actual nuts and bolts of it going to help you survive that encounter? If it becomes violent, highly unlikely, man, highly unlikely.
Mm.
So look, I guess this is my final stance. I don't think I'm ever going to talk about this again because
yeah,
the business partner doesn't like me talking about it. I know Maurizio doesn't like me talking about it. This is it. The average jiu-jitsu guy is always going to have a better chance than the average untrained guy. That 100%. Still doesn't mean he's going to have much of a chance in a bunch of scenarios. In a few highly specialized scenarios, that being a single unarmed attacker, he's going to have a big chance. And that's pretty much my perspective on it at the moment.
Well, you know what interests me more than effective techniques, right? Because, I mean, let's be honest, I live in Australia. It's very safe. You live in a gated community in South Africa at the moment where people have firearms, you know, where you're very unlikely to use your jiu-jitsu. But what bothers me about the split between sport and jiu-jitsu at the moment is, and there's a bigger split than sport and self-defense, because actually sport split in different directions, which is actually the topic I wanted to bring up with you that I think is actually quite interesting. But what bothers me about it isn't actually self-defense or sport. It's that the practice of self-defense has no creativity, it has no evolution, it has no bullshit meter. And that's what bothers me about it. The self-defense guys criticize the sport guys, but the sport guys at least are developing the skills of adaptation, resistance, conditioning, problem solving. So the most dangerous thing about self-defense jiu-jitsu is it's taking the fun out of it. It's taking the spirit out of it and all the things that make jiu-jitsu what it actually is. And if you take the spirit out of jiu-jitsu, you're just basically an animal. You're just fighting. Animals fight. Humans don't fight. We do martial arts. Self-defense trained like that is just I don't understand why you started jiu-jitsu in the first place, because it was to challenge yourself and you know what I mean? So that part interests me more than the actual technique part, because there's definitely effective self-defense techniques in jiu-jitsu, headlock escapes, you know, shirt grabs, that. But yeah, I'm confused why anyone would move away from the good part of jiu-jitsu.
So there's a certain martial art that comes from, it will be unnamed. It comes from a specific military system. Okay, I'm not saying anything. All right.
I'm a Krav Maga teacher. Actually, I'm qualified in Krav Maga, so you can pay me out.
Fair enough. It's the most deadly, dangerous, combat-tested, effective self-defense system ever devised. The Israeli military use it, blah, fucking
blah. Must right? be Krav Maga.
Yeah, so anyway. Okay, this is the scenario I always think of. I've got a house, right, that I have to defend. There's anarchy. There's global anarchy. Like, all the political, social systems have broken down. And there's marauding bands of robbers and pillagers roaming the streets. It's South Africa. I'm in South Africa, right?
Sudan, Johannesburg.
Okay, now I've got to defend my property and my family, right? South Africa. And someone says to me, okay, cool. In this hypothetical situation, I love hypotheticals, by the way, as I'm sure you've
figured out. Yeah, I do too.
So in this hypothetical situation,
I was hoping you'd loosen up a bit and give me news.
You can have 5 of the world's top trained Krav Maga instructors and experts with you. Right. Or you can have 5 guys from ATOS, including Keenan, Andre Goval, and 3 others, right, of your choice. And that these guys will be almost like cyborgs. They will defend you and your family to the death.
Right? Okay.
Okay, who would you take?
I would take the Krav Maga guys.
Fuck you, such a dick, bro.
But let me tell you why. Let me give you the reason why. Because
this better be good.
No, well, this will be much simpler than you think it's going to be. So I've been fortunate enough to train with actual military guys in Krav Maga, like guys who were instructors in the actual army, not commercial guys.
You did a two-week course on the internet.
Yeah, that one. No, that's the one I did. No, but the point is most of the tough Krav Maga coaches I know – so you got to remember, look, Krav Maga is a bit of a weird thing. So the Israeli army has like a six-week – like basically they put you in there, guys and girls. They've got to get you used to contact and try to get you to deal with aggression and put out aggression as quickly as they can.
Sounds like jiu-jitsu.
Well, you've only got 6 weeks, so they don't actually really have many techniques. Real Krav Maga's like straight punches, knees to the face, put someone on the ground, stomp them, baton defense, knife defense, and that's about it. And the rest of it is really just conditioning drills and aggression drills, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, most of the good Krav Maga guys – so Krav Maga itself isn't an art. It's just a bunch of drills. So it's just a bunch of drills. Like it's just a how you take a civilian and turn them into a compliant, aggressive – and less fearing person in good condition in 6 weeks. You got to understand they never really fight hand to hand. It's just not doesn't happen. But it makes them more compliant to be commanded. So what happens is the Krav Maga guys are as good as their background. So I mean, obviously Israel has very good kickboxing. It has very good judo. They're becoming better at jiu-jitsu now. So I met Krav Maga guys that were judo guys, like. Good, like high-level judo guys. Those guys can fight. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyokushin guys, kickboxers, Muay Thai guys, boxers, wrestlers. Those Krav Maga guys can really fight. Would I take them over an Atos guy? It's not that I wouldn't take him. It's just that the exposure to real violence and aggression is just a little different if they have that competitive sport background. If they're a karate guy who did Krav Maga, run a commercial school, they're still a karate guy. They just know how to scream louder. You know, so do you see where I'm coming from? It's the training method itself isn't too bad. It's just that most of the good Krav Maga guys are wrestlers, boxers, or judo guys that did military service. So, yeah, fuck, I'd take the military service. I remember they asked one of the Krav Maga guys, he's a judo black belt. I forget his name. It was it or something. He's a famous guy. I don't remember his name now. And they said, hey, if you had to get in a fight, what weapon would you choose to defend yourself? He says, an attack chopper. I was like, okay, this guy understands violence a little bit differently to me. I was thinking about being at the pub, guy in skinny pants, you know, halfway down his bum, you know, says I looked at his girlfriend and now misses by a mile with a punch. So slightly, you know,
it's like when Tixon, they asked Tixon in an interview, what's your best preferred technique against multiple attackers? He said my Glock 19 or something like that. I can't remember what the name of the gun was, but it's kind of like the same thing, right?
Which is massive gun collector. You know, so I think Matt Thornton put it best. He said, you know, we're not talking about self-defense, otherwise looking after yourself, self-preservation, because otherwise you'd eat less red meat, smoke less, and go for runs more often. He said, when people talk about self-defense, because most of the self-defense guys are out of shape and, you know, obese, right? Mm-hmm. When we're talking about self-defense, we're really talking about not wanting to be put to shame by another man in front of our peers, not feeling helpless. We're talking about not having to not go to sleep at night because some guy made us feel like a bitch, basically. Yeah. And like that's made clear when you talk about self-defense, because jiu-jitsu, you'll never feel helpless. So even just training sport jiu-jitsu, you're never going to feel helpless. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think there's a bit of misconceptions there. But I totally get your point about what you're saying. I just think like the industry is really weird. But you know what? Do you want to hear something interesting? This is definitely what I really wanted your opinion on.
Yeah, hit me up.
So I have a genius, like no one knows him. He's a black belt, old school, used to fight Valetudo, BTT guy. He's a Westerner. And I won't mention his name because I'm not sure if he wants to be quoted publicly. But really, really smart guy, like real like Hickson, like level genius at jiu-jitsu, but no one really sort of doesn't really put his stuff out there. And he said to me once, he said, you know what I noticed about jiu-jitsu? He said the curve of health and ability, it goes up to about 30 and then it crashes down hard, right? Mm-hmm. He said, I would take a six-year-old karate guy in good shape over any red belt. And now when I say red belt, I'm not talking about Mr. Gomez. I'm talking about your average, you know, out of shape, 50, 60-year-old jiu-jitsu guy with a belly. you know, that's so injured he can't train. He said, I'd take that karate guy in his 60s in good shape over, any sort of high-level black belt that's now retired and can barely walk because of his back, his knee, his shoulder. And I thought, dude, jiu-jitsu has a really messed up it's the opposite of most martial arts. So most martial arts, as you get older, you get stronger, you get more powerful, you get more knowledgeable, you become more vibrant. In jiu-jitsu, the opposite happens. It's a
I
sport of
don't
the
know if
youth.
I don't know if I entirely agree with that. I think there are definitely some examples which correlate to what you've just said, but
I think Master Carlsen late in his life, and man, he was not in good shape. And, Master Elio was healthy, but I mean, he wasn't going to be fighting anybody in his 60s, 70s, and 80s, So
yeah, but I mean, how many karate dudes are going to be fighting people in their 60s, 70s, or 80s?
I was in China recently because we're helping set a gym up there. And I did some Tai Chi stuff with some guys in their 60s and 65, 70. And man, these guys can like single leg pistol squat to the ground, pushing hands, Cossack squats right down bum to heel multiple times. Now, bear in mind, they've never trained contact, so that's where the cost comes from. But I mean, these guys are in good shape. If you train them in a live art form, they would actually kick the ass of an ex-competitor who can barely walk.
Well, I mean, there's so much. I have so much.
That's
This is something I think
serious.
about a lot. So, look, if your body is compromised, if you have adhesions in your tissues, if you have joint damage, you hemorrhage performance. That's an understanding of sports science, right? Like you're only. I've always said you're only as good as your jiu-jitsu is only as good as the vehicle that you can express it through, which is your body, right? So if you're like a gimped out crippled dude, I mean, it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough to be good at jiu-jitsu. And
100%.
I've seen a bunch of guys like that. It's like they've been sparring hard 4 to 5 to 6 times a week for 30 years, and then building up all this cortisol in their bodies. And just think about the nature of sparring. You're having a dude who's trying to take your joints to the extremes of their range of motion, and to get it to cause pain to get you to tap. Like, I mean, if you're doing that over and over again, if somebody's trying to take you to the point of crippling you over and over again, I mean, sooner or later, like, things are going to go wrong. There's no doubt about it, man. Like, but here's the
There is,
thing.
oh, sorry, you go. Sorry, Connor.
Well, I was going to say, like, you're never going to get to be, you'll never get to be a black belt for me without having injuries. I can tell you straight up, because then I'll know you didn't train. You didn't train properly. You didn't. But at the same time,
Well, I
we
think you
all
trained improperly, but I think jiu-jitsu is trained improperly. That's the problem.
no
So
dude,
I agree
all
with what you're
sports have
saying.
injury, man. All sports have injury, no matter how well
That's
you
true.
trained. It's the nature of contact sport. You're gonna get injured doing jiu-jitsu. It's gonna happen, bro. Like, you can minimize that through intelligent training and through
Correct.
picking correct sparring partners. I mean, but due to the nature, the volatility and the dynamism of the sport and the art, like, there's no way
I
you're
like
gonna
that
get injured,
dynamism.
right? So the thing you have to do, in my opinion, is you have to be constantly prehabbing and rehabbing your body constantly. It's like
100%.
Scott Sonnen, he's such a great coach. He always speaks
Oh,
about
dude, yeah.
he's an he's a
He's
legend.
interesting.
He speaks about cleaning the slate, right? Cleaning the slate. You always want to clean the slate, and the slate is obviously your body. And like an example of cleaning the slate, for example, my pecs get really tight from jiu-jitsu, from all the like seat belt and holding on the dudes, and my pecs are getting tight.
Pecs.
Yeah, so yeah, my
My
pecs get.
biceps and my pecs get taut.
Yeah, but that causes shoulder roundedness, which causes fucked up posture. So the slate has become dirty, right? So and then my
Oh
once the
yeah, I
slate
see what you're
becomes
saying.
dirty, it usually leads to an imbalance, which leads to an injury, which leads to hemorrhaging performance. So what I'm
100%.
doing, like, I'm stretching my pecs all the time now. All the time, dude. If I'm standing next to a doorway, like having a conversation with someone, I'll just start stretching my pec muscle, because I'll be like
Now, I was just teasing your accent because I'm devoid of all muscle and you're basically a Greek god. So that's why I was teasing you about having pecs because I've never had any. But you know what, man? The thing is, the Chinese styles have right. So Chinese medicine itself is a little bit untested, I think. But the one thing they do really well is all martial arts training has brilliant complementary training in both supplements, mental training, and physical training, whether or not their actual practices, supplementary practices, are good or not. I have to say they're probably not as good as they could be. It's not a lot of pulling exercises and things like that. But the concept that Chinese martial arts have about complementary mind, body, and spirit practices, you can't practice kung fu or kung fu, whatever, without those three complements, whereas jiu-jitsu can be practiced by most people. And you know what's really, you know Matt and Christy Walker, right? The gymnastics bodies and yoga people. She's on one of your videos, I think, Christy.
Yes, Christy Walker, yeah.
So they've joined our academy, and man, they've brought some brilliant stuff. They teach the gymnastic strength training stuff. I mean, with some other stuff too, right? And I realized doing their things how poorly jiu-jitsu is taught in terms of body preparation and regressions, because gymnastics is all about regression, complementary exercise, regression, range of motion, strength in range. Man, jiu-jitsu, you do a hip escape, push-up, sit-ups, and then you roll. People's bodies are not prepared for the trauma that jiu-jitsu starts to compound, which is exactly what you were just saying anyway.
I just had an argument with my business partner. Oh, not an argument. We had a bit of a disagreement. One of the chapters in my new book is it's called What Makes a Good Blue Belt. And in it, I have a hypothetical blue belt test, right? Or the test that hypothetically I would give if a blue belt was grading, a white belt was grading to blue belt. And keep in mind, I don't give tests. I think it's bullshit. But this is, as I said, a hypothetical. You know, I love hypotheticals. And in that blue belt test, I had a section on physical attributes and conditioning. And he was like, oh, you should leave that out because we're teaching jiu-jitsu. It's not about that. And I disagree. I disagree entirely. You need to get your body prepared for the rigors of training. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They just dive in.
It should be considered absolutely criminal not to get somebody's body ready for jiu-jitsu. I mean, people walk in with imbalances from sitting on chairs all day. They have glutes that don't switch on. They have herniated discs in their neck from sitting at the desk. Their quads and their hammies are imbalanced. And they get on the mat and copy some guy, you know, in Brazil or like, say, the Mendes brothers doing, you know, millions of different movements that they're completely incapable of without mastering the regressions, and they get injured. And they don't just get injured. Some people get really, really genuinely like disc problems, torn ACLs. I mean, I know a guy who loved the Mendes brothers. He's a fantastic jiu-jitsu player, and he had seven operations in 6 years. I've never had an operation in 20 years of jiu-jitsu, it's 2020 this year coming up. I have never had an operation. I've had injuries, but I've never had an operation. And look, operations happen. I'm not criticizing that. But seven or eight in the first 5 years of jiu-jitsu, that spells that something's wrong with jiu-jitsu at the moment. Now, bear in mind, I was his coach, so I'm probably responsible for some of that. But well, the thing is, I didn't recommend that style. Because I had a herniated disc early on in my back, so L5-S1 disc injuries seemed to be like just the jiu-jitsu cauliflower ear compliment. You know, you get your cauliflower ear and your L5-S1. And the thing is, I mean, it's happening enough that I'm shocked that nobody's asking questions as to, is this systemic in jiu-jitsu? Knee injuries, shoulder injuries?
People are asking questions, and people are looking at different ways to train. Like, Mike Bidwell from BJ After 40.
Oh, yeah. Is he the flexible guy?
Yeah, he's super flexible.
Can he be put in jail? Because I think he should be put in jail with the material he puts out there. I know he's your guy, but like, that guy is unnaturally flexible, and anyone after 40 trying to copy him is out of their minds. No offense. But you know, you might want to edit this part out. Go on.
The thing is,
I'm sure he's a cool guy. I'm not saying
he's putting that stuff out there just to show what's possible. I think that's his main motivation.
Sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to pay you out. I just looked at I was like, I know 40-year-olds and they should not be doing that.
He'll be cool. But he is all about treating the whole person. Yeah, he's going to hate you. You know, he always says, he's just started a new academy called Flow Life in Denver. And he says that when someone walks through you'll give him a good match. He says when someone walks through his door, he wants to treat the whole person. You know, like it's not just, this is a jiu-jitsu student, It's a person there, like who's got his own limitations and fears and abilities. And one of the ways of treating that whole person is, teaching a guy a bit of yoga and helping him stretch a little bit and getting him in
For
shape.
sure.
And I think there is, I don't know why you haven't seen it as much as I would have expected you to, but yeah, look at your academy. You're doing it. You've got Christy and the guys, like,
Absolutely, man.
and this, you're not the only one, dude. There's a lot of people who look at jiu-jitsu in that way now and are starting to realize that it's more than just the absolute basics of hip escaping and then the guy goes sparring, right? Like, can't do that
Man,
anymore,
I
dude.
saw Hickson recently, and I mean, it's I was sad, man, because he's obviously one, he's all of our heroes, right? I mean, he can barely stand up, man. People were talking about Fedor versus Hickson, man. I mean, Hickson can barely walk. I, on the mat, look, when he's in his minute, he's brilliant. Like, he moves brilliantly still, right? But man, he's, I mean, his body is, and that was from yoga and jiu-jitsu combined. And to be honest, man, I've got to be honest, I don't think yoga has the answers. And Mike, if you're listening, I don't really mean that. I just saw a real flexible guy and I thought, Jesus, if one of my like over 40 student office workers did that, he'd be carried to surgery with his belt wrapped around him, like a backpack. But
Yeah. Well,
I
it's just
don't think
so
yoga
people
has the
think,
answers for jiu-jitsu, man. I have to be honest. On its own, I'm
yeah,
saying.
that's the issue. People think that the answer is flexibility, but it's not. The answer is
No.
a combination of strength and flexibility, because if you're too flexible and your joints are overly mobile, you get injured really quickly, and that's not good, right? It's just as bad as being overly constricted.
The thing about what I've been noticing, man, is especially with L5S1 problems, right, and a lot of herniated neck problems, is if you, the style of jiu-jitsu that's being played by a lot of long guys is creating bad leverage on your discs. And the problem with having extreme ranges of motion is that it has to go through the disc because the disc is the point that the hip connect, it sits in the middle of the two hips, it sits in the middle of the two shoulders. So playing jiu-jitsu long, my friend Luke calls it short arm and long arm jiu-jitsu, like kind of southern and northern kung fu. There's like the Choi Lei fight, the fight or whatever, the long arm stuff, and then there's Wing Chun, which is the the southern short styles. But if you play the long style, man, it's gonna have disc problems. You can create better momentum in the rolls, but
The
ultimately
long
there's
style
gonna be
is
a
like the
price on
Barambolo
your
style, is that on the inverted guard stuff? Is that what you're talking about?
Anything where your leg becomes a long lever. So, for example, like butterfly sweeping, my favorite butterfly sweepers all have back problems. It totally makes sense because if you push your leg away from your body and then put a weight on the end of it, you're creating bad leverage on your body, not on the opponent, but on your discs, on your hips. So, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing BJJ over 40 is about reducing the leverage that the person can have on your discs, on your body, on your hips. And creating these extreme ranges of flexibility is going to be great, but also create big problems on the trauma that goes through your hips and your neck. So that's why I think we're seeing a lot of those sort of injuries, unfortunately. And I mean, it means supplementary training, but it also means jiu-jitsu itself needs to change a little bit to aim for 60. Aim for 70. It can't be
That's a
practiced
good
how it's
point.
practiced. Not funny enough, not your style though. Mauricio and Hodges' style, I think, can be practiced to a late age because it's not a long-levered jiu-jitsu style.
Yeah,
It's a very
I mean, Mauricio's still on the
short-levered.
mat now and he's like 62 or something. He still trains a couple of times a week. And then when I say trains, he spars and
He
stuff. It's
really
amazing.
trains. He's not
Yeah,
an
like
honorary.
legit.
He's not an
No,
honorary
he's
jiu-jitsu
legit,
guy.
dude. No, he's legit.
But
I wanted to
his
ask him.
style and your style is short. Levered style. You're not a long levered person. You don't try to reach out and spin and those sort of things, man. They don't have longevity on most people's body.
Yeah, I
Sorry,
know what you
continue.
mean.
I got
Well, yeah, there
excited
was this
about.
kid called Daniel in the UK. I remember training him, and he was like the next big thing. This kid, he was going to be the best dude in the UK. He was winning all the comps at Blue Belt, and he
Was he a
loved
young
it.
kid?
And yeah, he was like 16 or 17, I
I
think.
think I wrestled with him, dude. He was a bloody good blue belt.
Yeah, dude, but he stopped training a year after that, like because he used to play that inverted guard, and I think he fucked up his back or his neck. I can't remember which one, but he's done, dude. That was it. No more jiu-jitsu for the guy.
Do you know what's funny is I wrecked my back and my neck doing inverted stuff as a purple belt, and now I don't do it at all. And I've started introducing it into my mobility routines because I actually don't ever do it anymore, and my neck I'm used to now extending too much rather than flexing. So a lot of the movements are actually healthy without a 90 kilo dude jumping on you. But
Yeah,
there's
but
that
you see,
balance is hard, man.
you mentioned like how yoga doesn't have the answers. I think it comes from, please don't take this the wrong way, Liam, but it comes from a fundamental misunderstanding of how to use yoga correctly for jiu-jitsu. So most of the time when I'm using yoga, it's not to become extremely flexible. I'm not an extremely flexible guy by
You're
any
surprisingly flexible though. You've got like frog hips. It's weird.
But here's the thing. I'm not
Sorry.
trying to become extremely flexible. I'm just trying to regain range of motion that I've lost that I should have
Right,
naturally
right,
from
right.
excessive repetitive movements in my jiu-jitsu practice. So I don't want to be able to do the splits, dude. I don't want to be able
No.
to do like
Van Damme ain't popular no more.
yeah, right. But however, I do want to be able to sit comfortably without having like a restriction in my upper back and shoulders. You know,
So, dude, well,
like.
it's funny you're talking about this because, you know, as you know, I just had a kid, and actually I was speaking to Ido Portel about this when he was in Sydney, and we were talking about that it's almost like when you get older, you lose what you had as a kid. And I believe jiu-jitsu practiced correctly with yoga, mobility, you know, gymnastics training, that sort of thing, can actually return your childlike mobility and your – because I sometimes follow my kid around for an hour and just do what he does, and I can't do some of it anymore.
That's
And I'm
wild.
just
That's
talking
such a
about,
cool
like,
exercise.
squats and rolling and feet up on the – you know, like just
Yeah,
the
that's
way
so
he
cool.
stretches his foot. It's very yoga-ish, but – I mean, I want to aim my jiu-jitsu to 60, 70, 80 now, not 20, 30, 40, you know? And I think, man, the use of, unfortunately, the use of steroids and PEDs and stuff. And the thing is, I just want to point out before, because this is the topic I really was interested in talking to you about, and we're probably running out of time soon, but is that I think that I don't actually have anything against anyone putting stuff in their bodies. It's none of my business. Use steroids, testosterone, EPO, marijuana, you know, whatever you do, selling it to someone's a whole different story. But whatever you put in your body, like ayahuasca, it's your choice, man. You know, cigarettes, sugar, alcohol. But the only issue I have with PEDs in jiu-jitsu, and let's be honest, it's rampant. Like, it's not even it's last Abu Dhabi was the first Abu Dhabi where I was actually happy to see it was an even playing field because, like, everybody was just jacked, right? And whether people like to hear that or not, I couldn't give a flying fuck, I have to be honest. And if you don't think it is, you're an idiot or you're naive. So go jump somewhere else. But, you know, I want people to hear that. I'm not actually criticizing the use of it as such. It's not my problem. A competitive sport has injuries that are going to require you to do that to stay on the mat long enough to be good, right? So that's not my issue with it, man. My issue is that when 30, 40, 50-year-olds or kids try to copy the training or the techniques used, that the PEDs are masking the amount of injuries, fatigue, and body breakdown without knowing that their heroes are doing that. That's where my problem is. It's like you'd give me a diet and I can never ever look like you because you're forgetting to mention the one ingredient that, you know, kind of helps you out a little bit. It's to me the role of a teacher or a mentor or a role model is to create someone who's better than you. And if you're using something like that that you're not telling the person, they will never be better than you, which it creates all sorts of issues with injuries. And I don't know, dude, something really bothers me about not that people are using, just that it's not really understood how it affects the practice of jiu-jitsu for your average person. That's my bother. I couldn't care less if anyone uses it. That's not. I'm just too scared to use it. That's the only reason.
Well,
I
dude,
probably
let me
never
tell you
use
a story,
it.
Right? Like, I think you might appreciate. So, in
do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do understand.
I don't know if
totally.
My point was clear.
I guess it's just you want disclosure and.
Well, I want that the style of jiu-jitsu taught to people that it's not modeled on things that require. Things that are going to mask the injuries and speed up recovery that's being caused by lack of leverage or, you know, silly practices or overtraining. I mean, guys were talking about training 9 hours a day at one stage, just being the norm. I mean, that's impossible without anything, you know, being used. So I had kids copying them and they were quitting jiu-jitsu because they were getting injured and surgery and broken down. And they were like, well, I can never be good. It's not possible.
So I
have a real problem with that part, man.
Dude, you know, the story is loosely, it's not as strongly tied to what you've just said, but I think there is probably some value to it. Man, in June, I was in London. I was teaching at Jiu-Jitsu Brother in London for my business partner. And I sparred with this monstrous dude. I think he's like 120 kilos, big brown belt. And there was a scramble and I heard something pop in my knee, dude. Bam, like something popped out of my knee. And then my knee was unstable and it felt really horrible. And I knew something was wrong. And I thought, okay, give it a couple of weeks break. So I gave it a couple of weeks break. It started to get better. Went back on the mat. Yeah, depressing as hell. So it popped out again and it was injured again. So I thought, give it some more time. It took a month off, went back on the mat. Same thing happened again. And this went on for like 4 or 5 months. Everyone was saying, oh, you're going to need surgery. You're going to need surgery. And I didn't want to get the x-ray or the MRI. I saw I saw a doctor and he did an examination. He said, okay, I think you have a tear in your meniscus, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of dudes were saying, you got to get surgery. It's the only way. And I didn't want to do that. And I got home to South Africa. I went to see an anti-aging doctor.
Right.
And he prescribed some human growth hormone for me, a very low dose, right?
Mm.
And I started taking the stuff. And in 2 weeks, my knee was fixed. Done.
Yeah.
Like, hasn't given me a problem since, right? But here's the thing. I will tell anyone who wants to know. Yes, I used that stuff. I had an injury in my knee. It helped me. I'm 38 years old. I'm teaching jiu-jitsu all the time. It's my job. I used it and it definitely helped me. I won't be like, no, dude, I just ate spinach and had a drink.
100%. And dude, I fucking respect that you're doing that. And I know it's really difficult for your brand and stuff to even admit that. You know, I mean, you're probably the only person who's actually been outwardly honest about that use. The word rampant probably has a negative connotation. I want to point out again, I couldn't care less what people do. But, you know, if you're getting injured in jiu-jitsu and you're miracle recovering, one guy got his foot torn off, broken, and then 3 months later competed at Abu Dhabi. I mean, if I had a kid try to mirror that, I mean, he'd be walking to Abu Dhabi on his crutches. You know what I mean? Thinking he's a failure because he's a hero. And I don't care that the guy did it. I just want my kid to understand that there are sacrifices if you want to be at that level that people aren't being honest about with you. You know?
Yeah, what's that crazy film that came out? I think you told me that you put me onto it.
Yeah, Icarus.
Icarus. That was interesting, dude. Icarus. And I mean, I think what most people listening to this should do if they haven't yet already is watch Icarus.
Crap, what's that?
And then also combine that with that documentary. It's about 10 years old now called Smarter, Faster, Stronger.
Yeah, man.
I guess that'll give people just a more realistic understanding of the truth behind substances which you can put in your body which can make things happen, whether those be improved performance or improved healing. Let me put the record straight. When I took that growth hormone, like on some deep level, I kind of like knew I don't want to do this forever. It's just like a temporary thing. And I didn't feel great about it, but it was just a tool I used. It's just a tool.
Man, the problem with PEDs at the moment is like steroids or TRT is that we've been lied to about them in a way that it's pendulum over. You know, like marijuana's pendulum over to being like the safe drug because our parents' generation said it was the worst drug. And the truth's probably somewhere in the middle, right? I mean, I'm looking at my dad at 60. He looks way worse than Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sly Stallone, who are older than him, who are using drugs. My dad always told me drugs like steroids are going to kill you. Holy shit, these guys look 10 times healthier than my dad. Well, actually, my dad looks pretty healthy, but I'm saying they look 10 times healthier than most 60-year-olds. Yeah. And it's like, well, where's the truth here? Because this seems like someone's lied on the other side. But look, man, Nick, my main concern with the PED use in jiu-jitsu is because I stopped being a competitor just after purple belt, I stopped being a serious competitor. And, you know, I've gone on to being a practitioner, which I'm sure you're in the same sort of situation, right? Which my concern is my staying on the mat, right? Now, my only problem with the PED use is that I believe it's negatively affecting the jiu-jitsu evolution because it's you can use PDs to reduce and mask injuries that are being caused by techniques where they're ignoring the dangers because of this answer, but also the leverage that you can get to increase when you increase your muscle mass. So you make your arms shorter, your lats bigger, you make your arms wider. The future of jiu-jitsu, I believe, is going to be slower with the excessive use of PDs. And I think that as a coach is what concerns me. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
It's hard to
exactly
put that in words. It's hard to put
exactly
that in words correctly, but I feel like that jiu-jitsu long-term is going to suffer because of that use for practitioners, not as much for competitors. Does that make sense?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, it's such a complex issue, Liam, and I don't know if it's going to resolve itself anytime
soon. It
can
be answered.
Yeah, I mean, like, if it was like tennis, I'd say, I mean, look, a bunch of the dudes on the ATP top 100 are on some sort of performance-enhancing drug or a cocktail of them, and it probably has made the sport more entertaining to watch and generally raised the level. But the problem with jiu-jitsu is, man, it is so physical, and there's so much room for injury. And when you've got like a 115 kilogram dude who is doing his best to jack on your neck, and he was like deadlifting 300 kilos a week before because the deck of the javelin he just shot himself up with has allowed him to do that. Like, it's gonna, dude, you're already seeing it. I see it all the time in the competitive aspect. The life cycles of competitors are getting shorter and shorter and shorter.
Shorter.
You notice how like the big thing, like the big dudes everyone was talking about 2 years ago, they're just, no one talks about them anymore.
Gone.
It's like it lasts. Those cycles are becoming shorter and shorter. And so is that causing problems for the average practitioner? I mean, I guess if they're uneducated, but I think the kind of person who would listen to something like this, he knows when he looks at the dude in the gym who's stacked to the gills and is 21 years old and can do barambolos into like flying arm bars.
Dude,
he
but
knows
this is
not
this
him.
Is this is the problem is at one stage, I mean, remember when Hoist Gracie got caught and we're like looking at his body and like, it's not just those guys. I mean, the Meow brothers got caught. I've heard rumors of other kind of IFBJJF champions that don't look like they're getting caught. So we're not just talking about the jack dudes. We're talking about the guys that are using it to increase their ability to train hours and hours and stay skinny. And still, you know, so it just, you know, have diets full of, I don't know. I just, for me, looking at my kids, looking at them as role models, I think it's just, the one thing I do respect is their commitment to their art, that they're willing to die for their art. There's no question that that's a respectable thing in a way. It's just that the future of jiu-jitsu is, I think, being slowed because without those drugs to mask it, you would have to train safer, you'd have to evolve positions that don't have so much stress on your body. But then again, Munjiao's is like what, 8 fights? So there's a good chance that no matter how good your jiu-jitsu is, you're gonna still encounter some sort of position of where you're gonna get injured. But yeah, it's I don't really know where to go with it. It's an interesting thing. What's interesting,
I mean,
too now?
You can't fix it, though, bro. It's not your responsibility to fix it. And
not only that,
you can't fix it. And it'll resolve itself one way or other. It'll either mutate into something weird where it's like WWE, where it's just everyone just looks like Hulk Hogan, and you know, something will happen. And it's not your job to fix it, bro. Don't stress too much.
No, I'm not. I see. But the thing is, I don't care about the usage. I just want to be able to do the positions. And my body can't even do some of the positions. That's my kind of, you know what I mean? Like, when you're watching the sport where it's like, well, I can't do that. That's, is this the same sport? And you know what's really interesting at the moment is, and Hodge is probably the closest one to this. Did you notice also that there's no world's best grappler anymore? You know, Gary Tonin, one of the best submission wrestlers in the world, will go to EBI, win there, but then lose on points at, you know, the F2W or whatever. And then you've got, you know, the world gi champ, Leandro Lo, getting tapped out by Craig Jones, who beats Murilo Santana, but then fights him in points and loses on points. And it's like, man, it's crazy that jiu-jitsu splits so much now that there's not really any one guy that can be the best grappler in the world, except within their events. Have you
I don't
thought
even think
about that
that's
recently?
due. I don't think that's. I haven't thought about it, but now that you mention it, I don't think that's due to jiu-jitsu being split. I think it's due to the level. A general rising tide has raised all ships, and it's like MMA, dude. Like, there's everyone loses. Everyone loses, dude. Sooner or later, like, on a long enough timeline, the survival rate for everything drops to zero. It's the same thing. On a long enough timeline, your victory record has a loss in it.
Oh, so let me rephrase that. So that's sorry. That was I didn't explain that correctly. What I meant was that one person can be the champion in EBI, but can't be the champion in Abu Dhabi because of the points. And then that same guy, who's the champion in Abu Dhabi, won't be able to be the Mundial champion. But then the Mundial champion can't be an MMA
It's
champion. But
specialization though, hey. It's because
it's really becoming clear lately, which is really cool. I mean, it's cool. I think it's really
I think
cool.
that's pretty cool, dude. Look, dude, I guess all these things we brought up today are they're all positive things because they mean the art is in flux, bro. And that means it's growing, dude. If it was all stagnant and it was the same way it was 10 or 20 years ago, then we'd have to really worry. But all these things are coming to the forefront, and all these different opinions, and all these things happening. I look at them as largely positive, man.
Well, you know what I'm seeing nowadays, man? I think this is what excites me about it. Because actually, last time we spoke, you probably noticed I wasn't as animated. I was still stuck a little bit in the Brazilian jiu-jitsu world and the Gracie this and the Gracie that. Is what I'm seeing, which is really exciting, is there was that the world now is there's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but there's also just jiu-jitsu. And that to me is really exciting, man. Like, it's not Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Gracie jiu-jitsu. It's like there's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, there's Gracie, but there's also just jiu-jitsu. And that I'm hoping to be, to participate and help that along is that I think that's really the future. That's quite exciting, especially for people like yourself and myself, that there's just jiu-jitsu around the corner, or it's already started.
It's not what it used. It's a new. Like remember MMA, dude. MMA, you'd have like the grappler, and you'd have the striker, and then you had the ground and pound guy, and then you had the whatever. And then eventually, what happened is like MMA, if something else emerged that is greater than the sum of its parts. And I think that that is what you're talking about. The new school jiu-jitsu that's going to emerge is going to be this fusion of no-gi grappling and self-defense and gi grappling and a little bit of judo and some wrestling, and it's been going to become this thing
Beautiful
that's
thing.
great. You know what I mean? And you're definitely on the forefront of that because you are progressive and you're thinking in that way, and more power to you, my brother.
No, I'm looking forward to, man. I think just jiu-jitsu is I mean, man, it's been happening in films for years, Cinema Verite and Dogme and all those sort of things, but like I'm really starting to see it in jiu-jitsu now, and it's pretty exciting, man. And you've been ahead of it all the time. You just probably haven't worded it in that way, but that was the thing that really came to me when I was like, man, I want to talk to Nick about this. I'm starting to see this sort of neo-jiu-jitsu movement.
Neo
Kit's
Jiu-Jitsu, I
part
like
of
that. I
that.
like that a lot. I'm gonna
Yeah,
trademark
dude.
that. I'm officially
Hey, I
trademarking
already
that, bro.
trademark a butt face. Hey, listen, I stole that from cinema from my movie studies, pal. But no, but neo-jiu-jitsu, man, you, Matt Thornton, you've got, Kit, Craig Jones, you've got John Danaher, you've got, man, the neo-jiu-jitsu movement's already started. It's not something that can be trademarked. Eddie Bravo. And the thing is, no one's the same. Your style and Eddie Bravo's and John Danaher's. Do you know what the common thing among them is, though? Is the common thing among them is information isn't being handed down. It's being handed down and back. So if I'm your student and I create a move in Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, you'll name it after me, or you'll allow me to contribute to your jiu-jitsu. In the past, it's always been handed down. So I think that's one of the trademarks of this sort of like neo-jiu-jitsu movement. Is it's not about loyalty. It's about trust, two-way trust, and creativity, and promoting creativity and artistry. And it's, man, I think it's really fucking exciting.
That's
And you got
cool.
auteur, what's that word? Auteurs, auteurs. That film word, auteurs, auteurs.
I don't actually know what it means.
Tarantino's auteur. Well, it means you've got your finger in everything, basically. Like you have your sort of your your influence across your style. So Eddie Bravo has his influence across his style. You have it. You know, John Danaher has it. But it's I just love the each part of the movement has its own very specific style that allows the student to contribute rather mm-hmm. than just be, you know, somebody who has their shoulders stood on. So, man, I think the jiu-jitsu world is really moving somewhere fast, and I'm really excited about it, man.
That's cool, dude. Well, me too. And I'm also excited to say that I've literally just purchased the domain neojiu-jitsu.com. Thank you very much for that. Something cool is going to come out of that at some point.
You know what, man? You know what? Here's the thing. It's a movement. It's not a style. It's not a person. And Neo Jiu-Jitsu is the next thing you're going to see.
Yeah.
I was like, you fucking douchebag. But you know what, man? Take it. Do it. I don't care because I want to be part of it. I don't want to lead it.
Well, you are part of it. You know? We all are, I guess. That's the cool. Man, another thing I always point out about Jiu-Jitsu is that the interesting thing about it is it has... Okay, Royce Gracie, you won UFC in 1993, right? UFC 1. And
yep,
if you
still the champ. You ask most people who walk in my front door.
Yeah, and I won't get into that right now. But
derailed you.
The interesting thing is 1993 is pretty much around the time the World Wide Web and web browsing started to become a thing. And they've grown alongside each other. If you chart it and you look back, like it's they've been very entwined, and that's I think one of the reasons why it's such a dynamic thing is it's been fueled by the internet to a large degree, which, tying it back to the beginning of the conversation, it can have its negatives, like the forum warriors and dudes who just take it a little bit too seriously online, but it's also been really good for it, man.
I mean, look, we wouldn't be speaking if it wasn't for the internet, and it's open. It's made the world a smaller place. I mean, travel's got cheaper, connecting with people's cheaper, information's cheaper. But that said, it's also toxic, so you need to have that filter. But yeah, man, look, I mean, I believe that jiu-jitsu is going to be given back to the people, and I think that this, you know, movements like Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, 10th Planet, John Danaher, they're already. And I've got to include Matt Thorne in there, man. I don't know. Most people, he's not super popular. He is popular, but like they don't mention him. He's a hugely influential guy on a lot of people. And I think super smart, man. And I think that jiu-jitsu is being given back to the people, thank God. And hopefully in the future, it'll just be just jiu-jitsu. That's what I'm hoping to see.
That's cool. I might try and register that as well.
Nah, do it. You know what, man? I'll come and join you in it. You can register it, lead it. You're a leader, sir. You're a born leader. I'm the guy who just complains a bunch.
I have to go and do some kiteboarding.
Yeah, sleep, sir.
No. I got it. Oh, so you got to go to sleep. Yeah, I got to go do some kiteboarding.
Yeah, I've got to wake up, feed my kid in 4 hours. Enjoy your kite. Listen to the two different lifestyles. Yeah, I'm going to go kites on the shores of South Africa. Uh-huh. I'm going to go to sleep at 10 o'clock so I can wake up in 4 hours to feed my little rat. But,
cool, dude. Well, enjoy the rest of you.
Trying to squat.
Always good to speak to you, my brother.
It was good to speak to you, Mr. Greg. You know what, man? Please say your name for me once.
Nick,
I've known you for like 15 years and I still can't pronounce it.
No, Nick, you got it, dude. You got it.
Nick Gabriel, Nick Gregoriadis. I got it.
My brother, thank you. Good chatting to you.
Thanks for having me on, sir. I really enjoyed that.
Later, buddy. Me too. See you.
Cheers.
Bye. That was cool. I love the way this guy thinks. I really love it. He's progressive, man. And I see so much stale energy in the world of martial arts and rigid old thinking patterns. And I see it in myself like, you know, when I spend time around people like Liam and Kit Dale, I always think of myself as an open-minded person, and I think to a large extent I am, but I have my blind spots, and I start buying into certain ideas, and I feel my thought patterns and my belief system start to become rigid and set in place. And then when I spend time around one of these guys, they always remind me to be flexible again. And it kind of caught me off guard in this show, like, I started to take a lot of what I was saying a bit too seriously, and every now and then Liam would come with one of those little chirps and just lighten things up. I really appreciated that. It was a great show, and I look forward to having Liam back for episode 3 at some point in the future. I was just joking with him that after people listen to episode 3, they're probably not going to want to train ever again. No, no, that's not true. I'm just kidding. Okay, guys, so enjoy. I hope you enjoyed that. And last episode of the year is coming up, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday next week. It'll be out. Until then, train hard.